Sometimes it can feel like food has an emotional control over you. Well, it's time to show your food who's boss with Noom. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, I want to tell you I am stoked to be collaborating with Rotoballer this 2020 season with the Benched with Bubba podcast joining the Rotoballer Radio Network. Since 2013, Rotoballer has been grinding away providing millions of fantasy baseball players their fix for in-depth MLB analysis and player news. If you haven't heard, Rotoballer 2020 MLB Draft Kit is live, and all Benched with Bubba listeners can get 10% off Rotoballer's Draft Kit by using the discount code Bubba. Rotoballer is home to the number one fantasy pros accuracy ranker, Nick Mariano. Nick's 2020 rankings and projections are available as part of Rotoballer's draft kit, along with printable cheat sheets, draft sleepers, and busts. More than 300 2020 player outlooks and tons of in-season tools. All this fantasy baseball goodness from Rotoballer is available for 10% off with a discount code Bubba. Just go to rotoballer.com/Bubba and get your draft kit today. They have tons of great stuff, and you get premium with promo code Bubba, DFS, all the goodies. Use promo code Bubba, sign up at Rotoballer, get an extra 10% off with promo code Bubba. Now to tonight's episode of Benched with Bubba. Back everybody to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 296. We're gonna have a baseball season pretty soon, so we're gonna talk about that and potential shortened season strategies, some categories to target. We have a great person to do that. He's been writing some awesome content over at Roto Fanatic, the new site with our boys Matt and Sleepy Kirkland. Those guys are crushing it over there. You can find him on Twitter at Roto Clegg. Chris Clegg, welcome to the show. How we doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm super excited to be on tonight. I'm looking forward to some good fantasy baseball conversation.
Yep, we're going to have some good fantasy baseball conversation. Before we get into kind of the meat and potatoes of all of this, I mentioned Roto Fanatic. I know you got prospects worldwide. Just let everybody know like kind of what you got going on, what you're doing on Twitter, where they can find you.
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of you probably don't know me. I'm fairly new to this whole thing. I didn't really start writing until this March. I had a little blog that I started about a year ago just for fun because I love fantasy baseball and I've had a passion for it for a long time. And I just decided, you know, I'd really like to write and put some of this to paper. I wanted to share my passion for it with others. And so I had that little blog going for a while. And then SP streamer Michael Simeon gave me a shot to write on his site. And that's really where it all blossomed. And I really fell in love with this and doing this. And so I'm super thankful for Mike. If you're out there listening, I appreciate you, all that you do. And so he gave me a shot over at SP Streamer. And then kind of we merged after a couple months, so it became Roto Fanatic. So like you said, kind of a collab site that a lot of the writers from SP Streamer and Bases Loaded, they all came together. And we started this thing called Roto Fanatic, which launched late May. So it's pretty new, but I've got some good things going on there. I'm super excited. Also just started writing for Prospects Worldwide, which is another new site also. But I live locally in Greenville, South Carolina, which is home to the Red Sox single A team, the Greenville Drive. So I'm going to be covering the Red Sox for Prospects Worldwide. Being out there, I go to a lot of drive games anyway. And so now I'll be able to do some scouting on some prospects. And so you can catch me over there doing some scouting reports, but then on Roto Fanatic, specifically focusing in on fantasy. And so, man, it's been a ride. It's been an awesome few months and just super cool to see, man, just the community that the fantasy baseball industry has, and the Twitter community is wonderful. I've met so many great people throughout all this. And I'm just thankful that I've had this opportunity and just thankful for the people that I've met along the way. I'm just looking forward to getting some baseball back and just getting to know some more people in the community.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's cool. That's real cool that Michael Simeone is one of the I think he's too quiet. He's too nice. I think he's amazing. He's awesome. Once you get to know him, he likes to talk. He's very talkative, but he just kind of does his thing on Twitter, and it works perfectly for him. Like, he's such an awesome guy, a smart guy. And it's little things like that. Like, I have my deal. He's got his. There's a lot of free outlets like that that I try to tell people all the time. You don't have to have any experience. Just come on down. See if you like it. See where it goes. You never know. So that's cool that you dipped your toe in the water and you saw how much you enjoyed it, because in the end, we're all baseball fans. We're all fantasy fans, and getting to talk about it is what we do. And that's why the community is good. So that's awesome to hear. You mentioned the single A team. I love it because I go to single A San Jose. It's about an hour from my house, so it's not as close, which is, I wish it was closer. I go to a lot more, but I love going there and just, you know, relaxing, getting good seats, cheap, watching these young kids develop. It's much more like just relaxed and personal. I actually prefer it more so than like going to a Giants game or something. Hey, what's your experience like going to minor league games? Do you have a similar sentiment?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely, it's a different environment, and I really love that about it. It's like you said, you can go so cheap, and it's just chill and relaxed, and it's just a blast. And I'm a big Braves fan, so I'm about 2 hours from Atlanta, so I go down for 5-10 games a year. But it's just being the convenience of the minor league and the easy access, even talking to players, just the cool atmosphere that you get at the minor league games is really unbeatable, in my opinion. So I think I would tend to agree that I think that it can and sometimes is better than going to a major league game.
Yeah, it's just that feel. I remember joking around is the – I think San Jose's locker room's a little more blocked off, but the visiting team, if you're going like behind the third base bleachers to go get like a drink or something to eat, literally they have to walk through the same hallway to get to their clubhouse. So after they take BP for like an hour and a half before the game, most of them are like in their shorts and t-shirts sitting outside there because the clubhouse is too hot. And they're like, they're just playing cards literally in the walkway. So you're walking around, there's all these guys with like a bat on their shoulders hanging out. It makes me laugh so much thinking some of these guys are going to be in the show in like 2 to 3 years. Like, this is how it all starts for some of these guys. But speaking of young guys, you're a Braves fan. How much does it suck getting to watch Acuna and Albies and company all the time? It must be really, really tough to watch them on a regular basis.
Oh, man. You aren't lying. It's super tough. But then again, man, the deals they signed, I'm super excited to have them around long term. And there's lots of like going on in Braves country, but it's got to produce in the playoffs, man. Disappointing the way it went down last year against the Cardinals. Hurt a lot.
Yeah, that was a good series, though. Like, I'll never forget, and this is why baseball is great. You don't have to be a fan of the team, but the playoffs last year were amazing. Like, they were, like, really, really good baseball. And I'll remember that Flaherty-Fulte matchup in Atlanta. That was one of the better – Fulte pitched out of his rear end. He pitched really, really good. Flaherty kind of didn't have his A game, but he was such a good pitcher. He still pitched great. It was just such good baseball in that series. Obviously, like you said, it didn't go quite the way of the Braves, but they're so, so darn young, and you still have all those pitchers coming up. Their time's coming. Their time is definitely coming. So
I can hope so.
Yeah, there's nothing to worry about there. I don't know if it'll be a Bobby Cox, you know, Maddox, Glavine, and Smoltz type run, but I think they're going to have a – because that East is a good division too, so that's going to be a tricky one. But, hey, let's talk about baseball. We have a chance to see baseball here pretty soon, Chris. And I know there's a lot of people that have been like doom and gloom because it's been pretty crappy. Like, I'm not gonna hide it. It's been not the greatest of situations. You know, we think for a while we're gonna go over 100 games and maybe 80 games, and then nope, we'll be lucky to get 48. But now the MLB comes back with a 60 game deal, prorated salaries, almost everything's on the board. We know MLB is gonna come back with 70 games. They do that. They tweak a couple things in there. Owners are throwing a fit. In the end, I'm a big believer that we're getting baseball. I think we're still getting like 65 games. What's your thoughts? What do you think we're going to see?
Yeah, I have to agree there. I mean, as we've seen, it's just gone back and forth. It's been ugly, a lot of doom and gloom. I've stayed optimistic, just truly believing that we're going to get baseball, and I still think that's going to happen. Hopefully, we'll get some good news soon. But as we've gotten closer, we're finally I think, on the home stretch. At least we can hope. And so, again, split 60 and 70, you get 65, 66 games somewhere in there. So I think that's probably what's end up being agreed on. I mean, most of the other terms are pretty much in place now and just seems like it's lined up with what the owners have finally got on board with what the players want with the full prorated. And so I know the owners were a little pissed about the fact that they were going to have to pay, I forgot the number I saw, that many more million dollars to go from 60 to 70. But at the end of the day, I think we probably come in somewhere in the middle at 65, probably start mid-July and see till normal the end of September for the 65-game season.
Yeah, that sounds about right. They get their extended playoffs like they wanted, so they get all their TV money. We get the DH, a few other little things thrown in there. It's the most important thing is we're going to get baseball, and it's going to be a shortened season, so it's going to be tricky, and we're going to talk about some players to target possibly for certain categories in a little bit based on some of your work over there at Roto Fanatic. But just kind of in an open idea here, you know, some people like to play Roto. I'm a Roto fan. A lot of people like to play head-to-head. Don't fault them, because the whole point about fantasy baseball is playing what you like and have fun. So play whatever works for you. There's daily leagues. There's weekly leagues. There's bi-weekly leagues. There's so many ways to go about it. But on a shortened season, not everything's going to work the same. So what kind of formats do you foresee yourself preferring to play in a shortened season?
I'm already pretty strictly Roto. I'm just not a big fan of head-to-head and the luck factor in some ways. Last year, I was in a head-to-head league, and this guy in our league went undefeated all season. And, I mean, I still had a good team, but I ended up beating him in the championship game, even though he had a significantly better team, just based off the fact that my team performed better that week. And so I've never been a big fan of that. Just there's a lot of luck involved, I think. So I'm big on Roto leagues already. And I just think in this kind of season, you're going to have to play Roto. Because if we see, so we're looking at probably like 10 weeks, 10, 11, somewhere in there. There's no way you can effectively do a head-to-head league, in my opinion, because it's going to be so short, and then you have to get playoffs in. You're going to put everybody in the playoffs. How's this going to work? There's a lot of variables. And in my opinion, Roto leagues, the best team always wins. There's more time to play. You don't have to worry about playoffs. And so I'm already playing all Roto leagues, and so I don't plan on changing that just for a shortened season. So I would encourage if any of you head-to-head fans, if you've never played Roto, to try it out, because I'm a big fan. Again, I think best team always wins, and so I would say for a shortened season, you definitely probably need to play Roto format.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm team Roto as well. For the head-to-head people, like I've talked on other shows with people, like I did in this league, baseball show, and he's kind of had an open format for the three of us to kind of think of ideas to play. There's DVR's idea of you play everybody every week, and so that kind of they think evens things out. You can play a couple, like three or four matchups a week. I guess there's ways to go about it. But I prefer Roto. I think there's like fun ideas you can have if you like head-to-head. You can play Roto for like 6 to 8 weeks, give or take somewhere. Then you take like the top four teams and have a head-to-head playoff for the last few weeks. You can do stuff like that. But still, like you said, if your team doesn't play good that week and you still have the best team, you're still going to get screwed. And that's why I get frustrated with head-to-head, because, you know, when you're doing your research with baseball, like other sports, it's such a long season, and given short season now, but such a long season, you can almost always rely on the back of the baseball card. Not always, because, you know, guys have down seasons and whatnot. But when you're drafting a guy, and, you know, projections, either it's ATC or the bat or streamer or whatever, you're looking for, you know, 270 with 35 homers and blah, 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 blah. He might have a rough start or a rough patch somewhere, but by the end of the season, he's getting there. So Roto, you still get your reward. And that's what's really good about it. Now, if you're playing Roto, are you playing daily lineups, weekly lineups, biweekly? What do you prefer? Because on this shortened season, this is a discussion that I'm really looking forward to. Once we get the brass tacks of what's happening with extended rosters, I could see extra off days potentially. I could see, you know, there's going to be more players. Lots of interesting scenarios in play.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be very interesting. I like daily lineups personally. Always have. It's a grind for sure, especially when you're in so many leagues. I probably play in too many leagues. I know some guys in the industry playing a lot more than me, but it's a grind to set lineups daily and daily transactions. But again, like you said, there's going to be some weird things happening. You're going to see people getting more rest. You might see 4-man rotations, 6-man rotations. The bullpen is going to be weird. It's going to be an interesting kind of season, especially then it throws the wrench into the fantasy side. And so I do think that, again, a daily lineup is probably the best way to go. Weekly is obviously easier because you set it, you leave it. That's nice for some people. And it's good in a lot of ways. But I'm just the kind of person, every morning when I wake up during the season, I'm setting my lineups. I'm looking who's starting at the day. I'm trying to get it all down and ready to go. But this season, we're probably going to see even weirder things happening. And so probably guys are going to get rest when you don't expect it. And so being able to sub them out, there's going to be deeper benches. Will your fantasy league get a deeper bench because of that? I don't know. I mean, there's things to think about there. And so a lot of different variables that could happen. And so that's why I kind of prefer daily lineups, especially even more in this kind of weird shortened season that we're going to see.
Yeah, I've learned to appreciate the biweekly offense, weekly pitching that NFBC offers. But in this format, I'm definitely starting to lean towards give me the daily moves situation. But I want to do it where you can't make add drops every day. It's just one of those things that it's the add drops every day, I think, that really kills some people. Not everybody. Some people are bred for it. But I think that's what gets a lot of people on the daily moves things. It's one thing you just set in your lineup every day. There's another one if there's like one guy in your league that streams a pitcher every day and all of a sudden their counting stats go through the roof and you just have no chance. And that's like there's a fine line in how that all plays out. The other thing, like you mentioned, I think the expanded benches could be very interesting on that scenario. And it's another reason why I think a future article topic of mine, and you feel free to use it at the Roto Fanatic if you like, I think focusing on some multi-position eligible players is going to be tremendous this year. I think that's going to have a massive impact on your roster when certain guys get moved out. Like I've always been a Nico Goodrum fan. He moves up. There's a bunch of guys, especially going later, like John Birdies and all those guys towards the end of drafts that really get a bump with the DH, with the expanded rosters, that kind of stuff. Could be quite interesting and something else to look at.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It will be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. Last thing I'll ask in this regard, it'll just be a more of a pitching question since we're going to talk some hitting here pretty soon. And it's been funny because I think I've heard all kinds of different ways to attack it. So on a shortened season, you mentioned 10 to 11 weeks. So most guys are going to get 10 to 13 starts, give or take, depending on how they use them. Not all guys are going to go deep into games. Closers might not get as many closing opportunities as normal. Bullpens might get used a lot differently. How are you approaching pitching? Because it's going to be quite the wildfire.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth so many times on what kind of strategy is the best to take. And again, there's a lot of different ways you can go here. If you ever want to punt saves, this might be the most viable year to do it because, man, it's going to be pretty wild, I think, with that. I think the bullpens are going to be really weird. You're not going to have a long leash. So if Edwin Diaz blows a game, they're not going to have the leash for it. I mean, in 60 games, 70 games, you've got to put your best pitcher out there. You've got to put the person that's performing on the field. And especially in the sense of relievers, if Diaz goes out and gets one out in the ninth and gives up 4 earned runs and they pull him, that blows up your ERA. It kills your ratios. And so there's a lot to think about there. But I still like in the bullpen, I like trying to get at least one solid closer that I know is going to keep the job, like a Roberto Ozuna type. He's just a stable, like don't think he's going to lose the job, steady, gets the job done. And then I'm taking shots on guys later, like Keon Akella or Joe Jimenez. I mean, these guys, will they keep the job? I don't really know, but they definitely could get saves. And there's not many people in those bullpens that will take jobs from them. And so that's kind of the strategy for the bullpen. From the starter's end, again, I've gone back and forth. Should you go the pocket ace strategy? I don't know. Should you go hitter heavy at the top and look for guys in the mid tier like Max Fried and Zach Gallen's? I'm not really sure. So I've wavered on that, but I do want to highlight the fact that players with innings limits are getting bumps, like your Jesus Luzardo. He's the most popular example. And Luzardo is a fantastic pitcher, but his ADP has jumped 40, 50 spots almost in the last month. But my question is, is he going to go deep enough into games to make it worth it? If Luzardo goes five innings in a game throughout the year and he gets the same number of starts as someone else going in his ADP range that goes seven consistently, you're getting a lot more counting stats from those people that are going to be able to go deeper into games. And I'm just not sure if like Luzardo is going to be up for that, or they're going to let him be up for that to go deeper into games. And it's going to take him time to build up. And there's not really much time to build up in this situation. And so, again, I think guys that are innings eaters are going to be important. Guys that have upside that can provide value and good return on investments where you draft them. Part of me thinks that maybe it is important to go heavy on starting pitcher early because you get your workhorse guys that you know are going to perform. But that's still something I've been working through a lot in my head as to what strategy that I'm going to attack. We've been doing some mocks and I've kind of been playing around with it, just trying to see, but still I'm kind of a little undecided on that in my head. Do I want to attack starting pitcher early or late? And so I don't have a solid answer for you on that one.
No, it's tricky. It's really, really tricky. It's a fine line because, you know, when it comes to offense, you want guys that are pretty much locked into their roles that are going to, you know, get a lot of at bats consistently, but you might have to draft them earlier. So can you afford to draft aces early? But we know what the aces can do, and most of them should, you know, Scherzer, if he's ready to pitch, he's not going to have an innings limit usually. Cole, those kind of guys, Verlander's, there's reports Verlander's already thrown again, like stuff like that. Those guys shouldn't be on massive innings limits, but you can bring up the point of Luzardo. It's a very valid point. Is, you know, we love the guy. We love his stuff because it's filthy. There's no hiding that. But does he go five innings? Does he go four and a half some games? Does he even qualify for the win? How often does he go six or seven? Like we saw it with Chris Paddock last year. It took a while for the Padres to finally let him go deeper into ball games. And that's because the season's so much longer. Are we going to see that with Luzardo? Do the A's, you know, say, hey, we have a shot this year, but let's not waste him and rush him and rush injury chances, and let's have him and Puck ready for 2021. Lots of things to look at. So it's going to be wild. The teams that win are – luck's never the right word with fantasy, but there's going to be a few things you're going to have to luck out on. That's just the way it's going to have to go. Like, because we know how guys have slumps throughout the season. That's what baseball is, a lot of peaks and valleys. You're going to have to hit the guys that have very few slumps, if no slumps at all. And it's going to be – really, really cool to see how it works. And I'm just looking forward to the chance to watching baseball and playing fantasy baseball to see it all happen. And I believe it's going to happen sooner than later. You've written three articles at Roto Fanatic about shortened season stats, stolen bases, home runs, and batting average. We're going to go one by one here and kind of just gloss over them real quick so people can go read them. But when you looked at stolen bases, you looked at different people at different ADPs, and stolen bases is one of those stats that people attack them early because they want them early and often, but you were finding some that were going later in drafts, and you were finding guys that, you know, have 15, 20 plus stolen base upside, which if you have enough of those, is still really strong. You mentioned guys like Bo Bichette, who I am in love with, part of the baby Blue Jays. We don't need to go there. Victor Robles is a beast. But later on in drafts, like after pick 100, there's a couple guys you were looking into. Oscar Mercado is a guy that some people are in love with, some people, I don't know, they haven't been able to figure out yet, but what he did last year was great. People forget that he was one of the guys in Fabapalooza. Are you in on a guy like Oscar Mercado this year for his stolen base upside?
You know, I've been completely out on him until I wrote this article. Haven't liked the ADP, didn't think he provided the strong value that you needed, but looking into it, there's a lot of stolen base potential. And I think we probably saw the power maxed out last year, but if you're looking for stolen bases, I mean, he's definitely got 30 steal upside. I mean, his sprint speed is elite, 97th percentile on Baseball Savant. 90-foot splits are 92nd percentile. He definitely has the speed to swipe 30 bags over a full season at least. I mean, obviously, we're going to see that abbreviated a little bit, but he definitely has that ability. His profile's not that dissimilar from Victor Robles, who's going 50 picks earlier on average. And so you can get similar value there. And I know some are down on Mercado based on what he did last year, low OBP. He's not going to get on base enough to steal. But last season was a pretty big outlier once he hit the major league. I mean, he was a high on base guy in the minors throughout that career. And so there's no reason to think that he can't steal a lot of bases. And I think you're going to have to take chances. Like, teams are going to want to take chances because they need to win. And so when you have a speedster like Mercado, I mean, you got to use him. Let him run free, see what you can do, make things happen. So there's definitely that upside to steal a lot of bases there.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. And he's in that lineup, you know, with Lindor and Ramirez and Santana and some other boppers there. It's a weird lineup because it's very top heavy and then it gets kind of murky. So it's one of those, if he's hitting towards the top of the order, it's going to be gravy. If he's hitting towards the like sixth, seventh spot, could get interesting, but you'd imagine they're going to try to put him near the top of the order. But we could hope so, at least. You mentioned Amed Rosario, and this is a guy I took with one of my last picks in TGFBI last year, and it was amazing. Loved every bit about it. His draft price is obviously going up a little bit, but you look at a lot of his numbers, there's a lot to like about him, yet still not getting drafted that high. I think it's a combination of shortstop being so deep and then people just not believing in Amed Rosario still. But he's made a lot of changes at the dish. You looked into some of those. Are you believing in Amed Rosario now as a later shortstop target?
Yeah, he's definitely somebody that I like a lot. And like you said, I think some prospect fatigue kind of set in because he was the number one overall prospect on multiple outlets a few years ago. And then when he came up and kind of didn't produce, people kind of forgot about him and tossed him by the wayside. I mean, his first season, he was walking 1.8% of the time. It was pretty bad, striking out nearly 30%, poor batting average, but he's improved every year and he's only 24 years old. And last season, I mean, pretty good stats across the board. He had 287 average, 15 home runs, 19 stolen bases. And a lot of that came from his changes, his approaches at the plate. I mean, we saw across the board his contact going up, swinging less out of the zone and making better contact actually outside the zone when he did swing. But his zone swing percentage stayed pretty similar from first to second half. That zone contact jumped a ton in the second half from the first, from 85% to 92%. So he making a lot better contact on pitches in the zone. And he only had a 260 average in the first half, but then second half, that average jumped up to 319. And so big, big production boost there. Some changes were made at the plate. His strikeout percentage dropped. And that all goes back to, we're talking about steals. He has, again, elite sprint speed, and which tends to lead to steals. If he's getting on base more because his average is higher, then he's going to steal more bases. And again, another guy that's, I think 30 stolen base upside in a full season. Again, we're going to see that toned down a little bit, but he has the speed to do so. And he's shown the speed in the minors and the ability to steal bases. So I think now as we see him kind of get more comfortable with the plate against major league pitching, you're going to see that kind of boost and you're going to see him improving. And then that equals more steals the more he's on base. So I like that a lot. I like Rosario a lot as a target in a deep shortstop position. He's just going to keep falling because people are getting shortstops so early and they're filling up their spots. And then Rosario is kind of tossed by the wayside. So I've honestly found myself waiting a little bit at shortstop because there's so many good values so much later. I can attack other positions or other things early on in the drafts.
I completely agree with that strategy. Like, I have not been disciplined enough to do that every draft. When certain guys fall to me at the right spot, I jump on them, but it makes a ton of sense due to the depth. Like we just talked Rosario. Everybody loves Dansby Swanson, obviously. He's going much later than that. Like there's more. Jorge Polanco, there's tons of targets, tons of shortstop options. So if the replacement value for another position is there, I get it. I just find myself sometimes you see like the Lindor story, Trey Turner starts or Javi Baez or one of those other guys up top, it's hard to pass at times, but the smart move on paper for now would say to wait because it's so darn deep, but you never know. After pick 150, this one I have to ask you about. I saw your tweet about him when I was scrolling through the timeline earlier, and it's a name that many of us can't quit, and he was having a great season last year before he got hurt again, but Byron Buxton is going after pick 150. And the talent can't be ignored. It's more just the consistency. Are you back in on Buxton for 2020?
Oh, I love Buxton, man. I can't quit. And I've wanted to quit so many times. But just the improvements I saw him make last season, just big improvements at the plate. And again, he's elite runner. He's the third fastest runner clocked in baseball, just behind Tim LeCastro and Trey Turner. And so he's got the elite sprint numbers. There's no reason to think he can't steal bases. We know that the issue has more been injuries and consistency, the ability to stay on the field. He stole in 2013 in two minor league levels, stole 55 bases. He's got the elite potential, no question. But there were some very interesting things that he did at the plate last year that I really liked. He dropped his K percent by 7% from near 30% down to 23%. His walk rate doubled from 3.2% to 6.4%. Hard hit rate jumped from 27% to 38.7%. Barrel rate jumped way up from 1.6 to 8.3. Hitting more balls in the air, line drive and fly ball percentage went way up. The sprint speed's obviously elite. And at the ADP, I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find someone that over a full season has the 25 homer, still in 30 stolen base potential there. And so, again, there's the risk. There's a lot of risk that we have to address with Buxton. But last season, we know that he had a great year. But again, it ended shortened by the injuries. But I pulled out his numbers to 550 plate appearances and ended up with 19 home runs, 89 runs, 86 RBIs, 26 stolen bases, and a .262 batting average. And so, again, borderline five-category contributor there. If he can get the batting average up a little bit, which he was trending upwards last season with a lot of the changes in approach we saw at the plate, he's a guy I really like. He's very polarizing across the fantasy community. You either love him or you hate him. I think he's kind of seeing his last chances. Like if he can't produce in 2020, then he's just going to fall way, way, way down, probably lose a spot. There's some good players in the Twins outfield and in their farm system coming up. So a lot of potential for him to lose a spot. He's got to perform soon, I think. And so this could be the year. I'm hoping this is the year for Byron Buxton.
Yeah, I think many of us are hoping it's the year for Byron Buxton because, man, he's fun to watch when he stays on the field. The last player I'm going to ask you about here on the stolen base one, and it's going after pick 200, Colton Wong. We saw last year for the Cardinals, once he started playing regularly towards the top of that batting order, was very, very productive. And more importantly, he stole 24 bags last year, and that was a big, big plus. I don't think everybody saw it coming just because we've seen so much inconsistency with Colton Wong. Was this like a one-year deal with Wong, or are you buying in that, A, the value is insane, and B, this is the player he is, good average, good steals, little power. We can look forward to that going forward.
Yeah, he's definitely an interesting case. There's a lot of question marks whether he can maintain that. The 24 stolen bases were just completely kind of out of the blue, and he's not a great runner by any means. His sprint speed's above average, but it's not great. But again, at a position like second base, I think he could provide some sneaky value late in drafts. I don't think you're going to see much more than 10 to 12 home runs, but if he can post a good batting average, 280, 275 or better, and then if he can provide like even 15 to 20 stolen bases at his ADP, I mean, you're looking at a good return on investment. And so, again, I don't know how much of that is replicable. It may be a career outlier, but at that kind of pick, there's not a whole lot else around him, and especially when you're looking at like steals, I think he contributes enough across the board in a couple different areas to be of value there. I think he's going to hit at top of that lineup, and so you're going to see a lot of opportunities for him, but he's a pick I like under the radar.
Yeah, especially at that point in the draft, it's hard to find stolen bases at that level that late in the draft. So it's a very, very interesting pick, a nice middle infield target late, or if you missed on second base because it's so shallow and you get lucky to grab him late, that's not a bad alternative prize. Let's talk about some home run targets later in drafts on a shortened season. And the first one we're going to talk about is your cover boy on the article. And the fact he's going to have to pick 175 is bananas to me. It's Crush Davis, Chris Davis with a K. He was hurt a lot last year, and it definitely showed in the production. I'm a believer that he's going to bounce back just fine. Are you a believer that we get that raw power Chris Davis back this year?
100%. He's actually one of my favorite players to take in drafts this year. I've had some good debates with people on Twitter who aren't big Chris Davis fans. But, I mean, we know who he is. He's Mr. Consistent. He hits 247 every year, hits 40-plus home runs. I mean, 2018, he led the league with home runs by five. He hit 48 home runs. The next closest was 43. I mean, he dominated. He hits the ball hard, and I don't think that last season he just forgot how to play. And I really dove into him pretty deep, and we know that he got injured in Cincinnati when he was playing left field. He caught that great ball over in foul territory, hurt his hip, He just wasn't the same afterwards. But thing was, he started the season equally as strong last year. I mean, he had 10 home runs over the first month. And so looking like regular Chris Davis there. And just everything, all the signs point to him just being hurt. We know he battled a couple injuries. He got hit by a pitch that affected him. But just across the board, I think that he's a guy that's going to rebound. Could hit 247 again. Now, that was one of the listener questions. It's kind of fun. I mean, because he did it. He did four straight years. But
which is crazy.
He has the – yeah, crazy consistent. But, I mean, he's got the power, no doubt. I mean, we know that he has the ability to hit 40 home runs over a full season. And I just think that there's no reason to think that he won't do it again. He didn't just forget how to hit a baseball out of the park. But I think the injuries contributed a lot to that. And, again, he's going to contribute elsewhere, like RBIs. He's not going to be great for batting average. He's not going to destroy your batting average either. So he's a home run target that I really, really like.
The next one, Jock Jams, was one that when he was rumored with Ross Stripling to go to the Angels, I was over the moon for it because it was finally the chance for Jock Jams to do his thing. Now, with the universal DH, that will open the door for more regular at-bats, but we still know Peterson is not going to face lefties. He cannot hit lefties. I don't know if he's been given the proper dues. It's always a bugaboo of mine that they'll say young hitters can't hit lefties. They never let them hit lefties. So how are you going to learn how to hit lefties if you don't get to hit lefties? That's always one that just bugs me so much. But in the samples we've seen, Jock cannot hit a lefty. I think it's pretty cut and dry at this point in time. But boy, oh boy, can he hit righties and hit them a long, long ways. So I've been torn on drafts with him because the price is amazing. We know the power is insane. The universal DH should open up more at bats for him, but it's also the Dodgers where their roster is built to platoon everywhere. What's your thoughts on Jock Jams? Like, is he worth the risk for you after pick 200?
I don't know. I haven't gotten many shares of him this year because, again, the platoons just scare me. And in a shortened season, the platoons are going to be even more extreme, I think. And they're going to show on a fantasy team to the extreme if he's not playing every day. Like you said, the Dodgers are the king of platooning players. That's what they're built for. It works well for them. Even with the universal DH, how much more does he play? You know, I just wonder how many more at bats can he get? Because if they're facing a lefty, he's not going to be in the lineup. So I'm torn, but I've been passing on him a lot, even though we know the power potential is there. I just don't think the risk is truly worth it in a season like this, even though we know the power that he can provide. There's some other targets that I like going probably a little bit after him that have similar potential, and you don't have to worry about them being platooned. And so I've been kind of passing on him, even though he is a guy that I do like a lot.
Yeah, I think if it was a longer season, I'd be much more inclined because you can be like, okay, if he still plays 120 games, he's going to hit me 30-plus homers. But on a shortened season, 65 games, and he platoons and maybe plays 35 games, 40 games at most, that's going to put a little hindrance on things. So that makes it a lot different. We're just going to look over CJ Cron because this is a very pro CJ Cron podcast. We've talked about him a million times. So the fact that this is a CJ Cron article, big fan, people street it just for that alone. But the guy after him, I'm curious about, we're talking platoons and Hunter Renfroe. There is zero doubt that he could hit the ball extremely hard and hit it a long, long ways. There's zero doubting that at all. In San Diego, there was a question of playing time. He gets dealt to Tampa Bay. Everyone's pumped. And then they go and trade for Manny Margot and Jose Martinez and more guys because that's what the Rays do. They just stockpile players. So are you still in on Hunter Renfroe? Because if he does get every day at bats, he's going to be money. But there is another platoon situation here.
Yeah, again, the platoons I'm trying to avoid at all cost in the shortened season. But roster resource projects him to play every day, which is interesting. I don't know. Because the Rays are, again, they're just like the Dodgers. They're built to platoon these guys. There might be Willy Adames might be one of the few that we know is going to play every single day. And they're so deep in the outfield. I don't know. The power's there. I mean, he hit 27 home runs before the All-Star break last year. There's so much raw power. The average was respectable, at least prior to the All-Star break at 252. But he kind of fell off pretty hard in the second half. And I think some of that was due to injury. It was never like really public, like he wasn't put on the IL or anything, but the Padres manager did mention in September that Renfroe had been battling a sore elbow and a bad ankle that I think contributed to his poor second half. Again, I don't know. The home games in Tropicana are not much different than Petco. I mean, it's not much of a park upgrade, but it doesn't hurt him much either. But will he play? Again, it's a question mark. Just like with Peterson, are we going to get enough at-bats to make it worth it? I'd like to think so. And I think that, I mean, he's definitely a better hitter, at least, than most of the guys the Rays have out there in the outfield. But I don't know. Again, another question mark of guys that could be really good and valuable if they play, but will he actually play enough to provide it? It's the question.
Yeah, no, it's tricky. It's definitely tricky, but this last guy we're going to talk about, I think his value is insanely good. A lot of people thought he might have overachieved last year. I could see an overachievement, but the power's legit. He hit for solid average. The Orioles are a bad baseball team, but they can produce runs because that division produces a lot of runs. You know, the Yankees have some good pitching, obviously, but the Red Sox pitching's down. The Jays pitching's down. The Rays is good, but then, you know, the Orioles hitting them in that ballpark is always huge as well. And Renato Nunez, monster season, going after pick 270. First base can dry up. You know, we talk about CJ Cron, we talk about Christian Walker and some other targets late. Nunez is one that gets kind of overlooked a lot. Are you liking what you see in Renato Nunez?
I do. Yeah, I mean, he played most every day. He hit a lot of home runs, drove in a lot of runs. The batting average, it's okay. I mean, he hit 244 last year, so nothing to get excited about, but it doesn't destroy you. He's not hitting 210 to 220, but he definitely benefits from Camden. I mean, he mashes the ball, hits a lot of home runs. The splits, actually, surprisingly, when I looked into it, his home road splits were pretty even. He had 16 at home and 15 on the road, so it shows that he does have good power that plays pretty much anywhere. If you look at just his exit velocity, you're not going to be impressed. He's 67th percentile average exit velocity of 89.9 miles an hour. But when you look on line drives and fly balls, which I think is important to do if you're looking, trying to look at exit velocity, he had a 96 mile an hour exit velocity on those hits, which, again, those lead to home runs. It's the 28th hardest in baseball. He also barreled 7.2 barrels per plate appearance percentage last year, which is an encouraging number. I like that. I like him a lot. I mean, you can't go wrong with him there. I mean, at 270, 275, he's a 30 home run type player. He had a low BABIP last year of 272. Should see that rise a little bit. Probably hit closer to his expected average. It was 252 last year. So I think the average could bump up over 250, but the power's there. Like, if you're looking for power late, Nunez is a guy. He's a sneaky pick, and he's a sneaky source of RBI also at the end. So you're getting a couple things there, not just the home runs, but you're also going to get some boost in RBIs. And it's, I mean, at that pick, you're not losing anything. There's really only stuff to gain. You can get a lot of return from him. And again, he gets hot at the right time in a 60-game season, and you're going to get a big boost from him.
And you made a very, very – we had many good points, but a very strong one there. At that point in the draft, you have nothing to lose. Like, literally, you're either going to play him, he's going to succeed, or you drop him and move on to the next best thing. Like, that's the beauty of it. It's not like you're taking Renato Nunez at pick 64. Like, you're taking him 220 picks later. Like, things are good at that point in time. So I like that quite a bit. Let's go on to your recent article about batting average targets. And this is one of those I think can be very valuable, because some people just punt batting average. I think on a shortened season, it might be worth just punting batting average, because it's just up in the air, and, you know, a couple 0-for-4s can really change things a lot. At the same time, finding late batting average is not easy, and you put some really good names together here, and we're going to kick it off with one that stings, because I did see him play in San Jose for the Giants, and then he was traded to the Pittsburgh Pirates, and that's Brian Reynolds. And I didn't think he'd be this productive, but the hit tool is always there, hitting over 300 last year. Looked very, very strong, and people are buying into it again this next year. What did you see in Brian Reynolds, or do you like it? Because after pick 180, he's pretty solid.
Yeah, he's got a great profile. And, I mean, again, he's hit everywhere that he's gone. He wasn't well-known as a prospect, which, again, kind of flew under the radar last year as he came up. He was lighting the world on fire in Triple A. He hit 367 prior to being called up, and then he just continued it. I mean, he hit 314 last year, and also hit 16 home runs, chipped in a few steals with three. I mean, fourth place rookie of the year, Ryan Reynolds, right? And I mean, a guy that you would never expect to end up on be one of the finalists for rookie of the year. And he just keeps performing. He doesn't have the track record, which probably concerns some people, but in his minor league career, in 1,088 at bats, 312 batting average, he hits the ball to all sides of the field really well. He limits his soft contact. Nearly 85% of his contact is medium or hard hit, and the StatCast data backs it all up. I mean, his expected batting average was 296, which was 96th percentile of all hitters. And again, I looked at a few heat maps for him, and you can see, I mean, he's super productive on pitches in the zone, but if he can limit on swinging outside the zone, the batting average could rise even more, which is crazy to think, but I mean, it's so poor on swings out of the zone, like well below average. But if he can learn to watch the pitches better, if he can see that coming, if he can swing less outside of the zone, then you're really going to see a jump. I mean, the profile is a lot to like. I mean, even if he hits just 300, if it's 290, I mean, you're still getting a good return because he's not giving you a zero in other categories. He's still going to provide good value across the board. And I think there's a lot to like there with Reynolds.
Yeah, I think you're definitely onto something there. I've had a hard time pulling the trigger at that point in the draft, but I definitely see the batting average appeal. If you're in like a five outfielder league, that's a great later target because he's not going to kill you in any one stat. The Pirates offense isn't going to be great by any means, but it's getting better. See what moves they might make on a shortened season. Maybe let some certain players come up and get some more playing time and a little more productive than we think. Maybe Josh Bell bounces back after that second half kind of swoon. Who knows exactly what happens there, but one thing's for certain, Reynolds is something special. When you look at that chart like you're talking about, the way he protects the outside of the plate is pretty darn impressive. I was quite shocked by that. Hitting 457 middle out, 400 low and away, and 471 down the middle. That's pretty good stuff. Yeah. Let's go to the Washington Nationals. This is a guy that I've found myself liking more and more because it just seems like he gets forgotten about. I know, like, you know, they lost Bryce Harper, but then they go and win a World Series. They lose Anthony Rendon, another big loss, but they still have Trey Turner. They still have Juan Soto and company. The offense is still going to be very good. And at the top of that order is Adam Eaton. And, you know, so we talked about Buxton's injury history. Eaton has one as well. But when he's on the field, very, very productive batting average, good OBP, still steals bags, a little bit of pop, and he's going to score runs. So after pick 200, I'm on Adam Eaton. Are you on Adam Eaton?
Oh, 100%. I mean, if you're looking at the strategy of just chipping away at home runs and steals, like a death by a thousand paper cut type strategy, Eaton's the perfect target. I mean, he contributes everywhere. He's going to be elite in runs scored. I mean, we know that. The batting average is well above average. I mean, last season, 15 home runs and 15 steals. That's pretty respectable. And honestly, a lot of people won't like this, but a very similar profile to Andrew Benintendi, who Eaton actually outperformed last year. And obviously Benintendi's a lot higher upside. He's shown to be able to outperform that, and he doesn't have the injury history, but Eaton's got great ability, and the Nationals obviously loved him enough because people are quick to forget how much they gave up in a trade to get Eaton back in 16. They gave up Giolito, Ronaldo Lopez, and Dane Dunning, who were all big time prospects then. And so they really believed that Eaton was a piece that would help them win. And he did that last year. He produced across the board. He stayed healthy the full season. He played 151 games, and he provided across the board. He helps you in many places, and he's not going to hurt you a lot of places. He's going to excel in runs. He's going to be a good source of batting average. And again, if he can be a 15 home run, 15 steal guy, then great value at his ADP going after pick 200.
Yeah, I'm all on board with that. I think it's absolutely phenomenal. You mentioned Benintendi, who's going a lot earlier, over 100 picks earlier than Eaton. I'm not saying pick between the two, because I'm pretty sure you just said you'd rather have Eaton. But out of curiosity, I know there's people buying back in on Benintendi. He burned many of us. I had him ranked very high last year, and it was disgusting. But I know people are buying back in on him, you know, hitting towards the top of the Red Sox order. No bets, but still a pretty good offense, obviously, Devers and Bogarts and others. Are you are you a believer in Benintendi bouncing back, or are we kind of getting what we think? Like, is he who we think he is type thing?
I think he's going to perform better than he did in 2019, but I'm not sure if the value is worth what people paid prior to 2019. I mean, we know he's definitely better than that. I mean, he's shown that ability, but I don't know. I mean, I do believe that he will be improved, but how much, I'm not sure. I think a lot of people thought that he was going to be a lot better and people were paying a high price. But personally, I think we know what we're going to get at best, and that's probably like a 20 home run type player. But I like him, don't get me wrong, but I'm not sure. I think his value is probably pretty close to accurate, going around pick 100. I'd maybe take him a little higher, but again, I think we know what he is. I don't think the upside's like tremendous.
Well, the next guy in your article is Alex Verdugo, who the Red Sox got from the Dodgers in that Betts and Price trade. And a lot of people love Verdugo for his batting average. Would you rather have Verdugo or Benintendi based on their price?
Solely based on price, I actually like Verdugo. I mean, he seems to be fully healthy. He came out and said at the beginning of May that he's good to go. He's 100% ready for the season. And if that's the truth, if he's truly healed from his back injury, then I don't see any reason that he'll provide a better return on investment where you're paying. I mean, going at pick 231, again, there's not a lot of risk, but there is upside. He hits the ball well. I mean, he hits the ball to all sides of the field. He has good power, good batting average. He probably could produce similar stats to what Benintendi does. Maybe probably less steals, but still, he's got good value, and the rate of return is a lot better, a lot more likable at his ADP.
The last guy that I'm going to ask you about in this article is Howie Kendrick. And I love Howie. People don't love Howie. The guy just hits and hits. He's not as old as people think he is. He's old, don't get me wrong, but not nearly as old as people think. The biggest problem with Kendrick is regular playing time, but he's got eligibility all over the diamond. He, with the DH, that could help him play some more. Mashes lefties, hits righties just fine. There's a good chance he still plays quite a bit, and he's going after pick 400. What is there not to like about Howie Kendrick?
I mean, at the price, there's everything to like. You mentioned the mashing left-handed pitch, and he hit 376 against lefties last year. Right-handers, just 327. You know, nothing to scoff at there. A great hitter. He just hits the ball. I mean, his exit velocity, all of his – if you look at his baseball savant profile, it's just blazing red. 92nd percentile exit velocity, 100 percentile expected batting average, K percentage 91st percent, hard hit percent 94, X slug 98th percentile, whiff percent 89th percent. I mean, it's endless. I mean, he's a great hitter. He just doesn't play. And that's the concern. Like, he's just not going to get enough at bats to be worth it. But at that price, I mean, you don't lose anything at all. At 414, what? I mean, that's insane. And so you can plug him in a daily lineup league when you know he's going to play, especially if he's playing against a left-handed pitcher and he's just going to mash. He's a great hitter all around.
Yeah, I think you said the daily lineup. I think he's tremendous in a daily lineup league. He's harder for a weekly lineup league. Would you draft him in a weekly lineup league?
In a deep league, yes, but it just depends on how deep. And probably in a standard like 12-team roto league, he's probably going to sit on the waiver wire. If he gets hot, you can snag him. But in like an NFBC format, like he's definitely worth drafting. How late he's going?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm kind of at that point with him right now. There's just so much to like with him, and you know, Ryan Zimmerman doesn't scare me for playing time. He'll probably get hurt. It's just one of those deals. It just takes one little injury here. They're like, I like Starlin Castro at second base. So I think that's a good move there. You still got Cabrera running around. Like, there's a lot of moving parts there, but the fact Kendrick can play a lot of places and that DH will be tremendous for Howie. And I think he's got another good year of batting average in him with a little bit of pop. So definitely something to like there. Before we get to the listener questions, I know you did a lot of work for the MLB draft. You were tweeting stuff out a lot, and you did some talking on different shows and writing about it. Just for fun, I recapped the draft on the last episode with James Anderson. And you know, we talked about the top picks, you know, especially offensively, Torkelson and Martin and Gonzalez and Veen, those guys that went early. Outside of the main targets, Howard was mentioned a lot with the Cubs. Outside of the main targets, who would be some of the guys you'd be looking for in first-year player drafts? Just I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but who are some guys you might be looking at?
Yeah. So like an outside of like the top 10, top 15, like picks, like I really love Nick Bitsko. He's a tremendous pitcher. And I think it's a match made in heaven with the Rays. I mean, he fits that system perfectly. They develop pitching. He resembles Charlie Morton a ton. He's one of the most polished 17-year-old pitchers that I've seen. And so the upside is just tremendous. So from a pitcher standpoint, probably one of my favorites there. And he's, and what I see, tend to see a lot in first-year player drafts is that people just look at where they were drafted. And the fact that he went in the 20s, you know, people are going to see that. He's going to sit back for a while. But again, he's only 17. It's going to be a while till he's around. If you're looking for players that are going to contribute sooner, he's probably not the guy. But long-term development, I think he's going to be a frontline starter. I like him a lot. If you want to go to later rounds, the Mets just had a tremendous draft all around, a lot to like. But Isaiah Green, a guy they took in the third round, he just raw upside. I mean, he's got potential to be a 20 home runs, 30 stolen base type guy. And again, no one's going to draft him in first-year player drafts. He's raw. His floor is probably very, very low. So it's the whiff potential on him is likely. But if he does hit and he develops, then he's very, very raw and got the huge upside. So I like Green a lot there. Now, those are just a couple guys that I like. But obviously, the high-end guys, I mean, Austin Martin, he's probably the second best player next to Torkelson. From a fantasy standpoint, I think Asa Lacy is going to be a stud. Lots of line. This draft was deep, man. There's some seriously good players. So even no matter where you're picking in your first year player draft, there is a lot to like.
No, I like that. It seems like a really good draft, especially for fantasy purposes with a lot of those top end guys. So it'll be fun to see. And we'll see some of those guys pretty quickly, it sounds like. So that'll be pretty sweet. Let's do some listener questions here. We got about five or six listener questions, which was great as always. At Sleen Dress has a question for you. You kind of hinted at earlier. Will Chris Davis hit 247 regardless of season size? So if he's not going to hit 247, do you think he hits over or under 247?
I'll say he hits 247, but I'll probably take the under, but not by much. Not by much. I'll say he hits somewhere between like 242 and 247.
I like it. I like it a lot. Dave Swain, good listener of the show, friend of the show. At Davithius, he asks, who do you believe everyone is drafting too high, one pitcher and one hitter? So if you're looking at ADP or whatever, who are a couple of guys you think are going too high?
And this is going to upset some people, but DJ LeMahieu is not a guy that I'm in on. He's going pretty high. I don't have the exact data of where he's going right now, but all the drafts I've been in, just too high for my likings. I mean, I've seen some deep dives where he is, I mean, people back up what he did, but I just have a hard time buying into a guy who had a huge breakout at age 31. And I know that Yankee Stadium played a big part of that, but at the same time, I mean, he was playing in Coors Field, which, again, one of the best places to hit. And I just pulled up, he's going to pick 62. I think that's a little high for my liking. There's no way. I don't think he's going to hit the home runs again. You know he's going to produce a good batting average, but nobody was even drafting the guy last year in most standard roto leagues. And then here he is, I mean, breakout season, but it's just a little high for my likings. I know that probably upsets a lot of people, but that's a guy I've avoided a lot.
I'll do my hitter and I'll let you do your pitcher. Yeah. The hitter for me, and it's a guy I've been off the entire time and it bugs people as well, but it's Big Meat Pete Alonso. I think he's going too high for me. He's going to pick 33 right now. There's no hiding the fact he's a very talented power hitter, but especially in a shortened season, if he gets off to a slow start, you can kiss that goodbye. That's a high pick for that situation. We saw in the second half last year, the strikeout rate rose. You saw where pitchers were pitching him more. He was chasing like crazy in the second half. If the bouncy ball's not there, it won't affect him as much, obviously, even though I think the bouncy ball will be there. But all it takes is one little slump that second half. We saw it where the average dropped tremendously. The power wasn't as great. Still good, but not as great. Where you're drafting him, it could be a big detriment to your team. So I haven't been on Big Meat Pete all season. I'll definitely be off of him in a shortened season. What pitcher are you looking at?
struggle with this one. I will say with a caveat, I was off Zach Greinke prior to the season, but in a shortened season, I do think Greinke provides good consistency that you do need. But I'm going to go actually a reliever and say Josh Hader, just because pick 60 overall, man, that's just a little high for my liking for a guy who not even sure is going to get the bulk of the saves in Milwaukee. We know Corey Knebel's coming back. They've got some intriguing options in the bullpen, and they've shown in the past that they actually like Hader better in like that fireman role. And so, again, he provides elite ratios, a lot of strikeouts, but drafting a closer that high who I don't think has a lot of job security is just not a route I'm looking to go.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see that, because I think Knebel will get into a handful of saves, maybe even double digits. Just that three-batter minimum is going to be interesting this season, especially on a shortened season, so keep that in mind. Mine, a little bit after Hader, is Tyler Glasnow. I don't doubt he has talent, but between the injury history, the lack of consistent location in the zone, and the lack of another pitch, those things all just don't add up for me. We saw him pitch really well, but just couldn't stay healthy, walking too many guys for my liking, and he needs that third pitch. So Glasnow's a guy. Like, Greinke's going right after him. I'd rather have Greinke. There's guys after him, Woodruff, even Jose Berrios. I'm not a big Berrios guy, but he eats up a lot of innings, so I could see that being nice. But Glasnow will not be on many of my teams, that's for sure.
Yeah, I can get on board with that as well. Just not consistent enough to be worth it in a short season. He doesn't have enough time to really get going. So, yeah, kind of out on Glasnow as well.
All right, good friend of mine and good friend of the show, Mr. Yancey Eaton. He always brings the fun questions that aren't even fantasy-related, which I appreciate. He asks, what does Clegg do for fun that isn't sports-related?
Man, a lot of my time is actually with sports-related stuff, obviously. I'm doing a lot of fantasy baseball stuff. I'm a big golfer, so that's probably my biggest hobby is golf. I actually coach the local high school team here, so I played in high school. Was going to play college golf, but I kind of got burned out a little bit, so passed up a chance. Many regrets. I regret that a lot now. Wish I could go back. But also, I play guitar, so that's kind of another hobby. And then spending time with my wife. Don't have any kids yet. We have two little dogs, so spend a lot of time with her and the dogs. So those are a couple of the hobbies. Kind of boring, if you'd say, but yeah, that's what I like doing.
We have a lot in common. I don't play a musical instrument. What kind of guitar do you play? Do you play acoustic or electric, both?
Yeah, I can play both, but I prefer playing acoustic, like a rhythm. Yeah.
Just kind of hanging out by the campfire and playing a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
I can dig that. Yeah, no, I love golf. Absolutely love golf. I'm not nearly as good as you, it sounds like, but I enjoy playing golf. I'm like I fluctuate between like a 14 and a 16 handicap, depending on the day. But you sound much better if you had a chance to go play in college, because I have a very good friend who had college offers and didn't go play in. He fluctuates between like a -3 and a +2. So he's very good. It's fun to play with him. But yeah, I'm with you. I have the wife, the two dogs. We have a baby on the way. But for the longest time, it was just the same situation. So I get it. It doesn't sound like flashy, but it's awesome. I'm all for it. Wouldn't pass it up at all. What is your golf handicap, out of curiosity?
I'm playing to a 4 right now. Kind of went through a rough stretch. January through March, man, it just was rough. I went from a 3 to like a 6.5 in a short period of time. But yeah, I was just couldn't get together, but been just grinding, trying to get it back. Shot 72, even par last weekend. So finally feeling good about that.
So I was going to say, I want to go play golf. I was going to say, I want to go play golf with you, but I'm going to get my butt kicked. So that'd be fun.
That would be fun.
And there's a lot of us that golf in this industry, so you'll be surprised. It's going to be one of those deals. I get told, A, I need to come out to First Pitch Arizona, which I haven't done yet. And I got told, B, I need to bring my clubs because there's a group of guys that want to go play golf. So you'll definitely have to join in on that one whenever.
Yeah, that'd be a blast.
The next question, we'll keep this golf related. Michael Simeone, a guy you might know. We talked about him a little bit at the beginning, Mr. SP Streamer. It's a great question. What's the favorite golf course you've ever played on? Because you sound like if you played in high school, you probably played some good courses during that. And just in general, you probably played some good ones. You have so many awesome options over there. So what's the best one or the one you enjoy the most?
Yeah, we have a lot of good opportunities down in like the Myrtle Beach area, a lot of good courses. Yeah. I've never played anything like the tour guys play. Like I've always wanted to get on like Harbor Town or the Ocean Course. Haven't had that chance. There's two courses that that really stand out to me. One of them is called True Blue. It's down in like South Myrtle Beach. It's just a tremendous course. Like we played our state championship there 4 years ago, the team I coach. So again, the benefits of coaching, got to play, practice around with them a couple of times. So that was a lot of fun. But then back to the high school days, there's a course down in Aiken, South Carolina near Augusta. It's called Palmetto Golf Club. And they
I've heard about that.
Yeah. So I played in that 4 years in a row, Southern Cross tournament. And it's just unbelievable. It's called like Augusta Junior. It's really close to Augusta and just unbelievable tournament experience. Like that's like the peak of all high school tournaments. And just to be able to play that 4 years in a row was just something special. And the course is, man, it's hard as crap. Like it eats your lunch, but you just can't beat playing a course that quality and that fun. And so that's probably my favorite I've played.
Yeah, I've heard of Palmetto, so that's supposed to be a pretty sweet one. For me, I've played Silverado, where the Safeway's at up in Napa. If you can hit a straight drive there, you can score. I'm just not consistently straight off the tee. So it's not one of the more challenging golf courses on tour, that's for sure. But where I live now, down in a little south of Monterey, I didn't live here for high school. If I did, cause I played a little high school golf up in the Sacramento area, but the kids here, they got to play Pebble and Spyglass, all those courses as a part of it. I'm just sitting there like, you guys suck, all of you.
So
like
envious. All
of, yeah. Like they're telling me stories about that, and it's like, you guys stink. One of these days I'll play Pebble. I haven't played it yet, but out in this way, one of my favorite courses, and my buddy who I mentioned is the really good handicap, he's played Pebble, but he plays Quail Lodge with me, and he says mm-hmm. he likes Quail Lodge better than Pebble. He says the only thing you don't get is the ocean, which who cares? You're playing golf. Yeah. But it's cool. I get seeing the ocean. Like, I get it. But it's not – you're playing golf. But the greens, like I love putting. I pride myself in putting, and they roll pure and fast, and they're just glorious. Like, I love everything about them. So I like that one. There's Poor Man's Pebble Beach called Pacific Grove. That's really cool. It's like the first nine holes are inland, and then the back nine are on the ocean. So you get a little bit of both. I know I'm going to name off more than just one, but played Morro Bay this last week and I've wanted to play forever. It was awesome. But the other one I will mention, it's up by San Francisco. It's called Half Moon Bay. They have an old course, which is in houses, like a par 70, not a super long course, really fun. And then they have the ocean course, the Link style. But you see like the photographs, you play the old course, first 16 holes are in this land and the like housing, then you pop up off of 16 green. And it's a par three with the ocean behind it. And then 18's got the ocean to your right and this gigantic Ritz-Carlton behind the green. And so as you approach the green, the patio right there is where their bar and lounge is. And it's packed in the afternoon. So as you're approaching the green, chipping up or whatever, and then putting, there can be anywhere from like 20 to 200 people watching you.
Yeah.
And it's one of the coolest experiences ever for a guy like when you're not like just a regular golfer. But they're sitting there like clapping for you and stuff. It's nerve-wracking, but awesome. So
yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That sounds like a great experience.
So, yeah, I as you can tell, I enjoy golf, so I could sit here and talk this with you all day, but people probably want your fantasy baseball questions. So let's get to Stoli at John_Stoli. He asks, he wants to hear the best trade you're able to pull off. He's a sucker for a good trade. So did you have like a Pirates got robbed by the Rays type trade, or did you have a good trade?
Yeah, so I had a trade last year in my home dynasty league that really boosted me over the top. I was able to get Shane Bieber and Mike Moustakas right. So I traded Aaron Civale, Brent Honeywell, and one more prospect, Jonathan India, and was able to snag Bieber and Moustakas. It was like right near the trade deadline. It was right after Civale had taken off, sold high, and I didn't win. I unfortunately finished second. I slumped down the stretch and sucked to lose, but getting Bieber in a dynasty like that for pennies on the dollar was pretty sweet. So that's probably one of the best moves I made. But I do want to highlight a worst move because this move will haunt me forever. It's in another keeper league that I'm in that I've been in for a good while now. And as I had Juan Soto as a prospect coming up, and one of the league mates suckered me into trading him the day he got called up. I was like, all right, I'm not sure what he'll turn into. Like, I obviously thought he could be something special. But I swapped him and Luke Weaver, and I got Bichette and Adele, which is not – terrible, but still, it's like Juan Soto, man. Like, I missed out on that, and it just beat myself up about it daily. I still think about it. It's been a couple of years now, and I just hate it so much. But so yeah, you win some trades, you lose some trades.
In a few more years, that one might look pretty good.
Time will tell. But that's the fun of dynasties. I'm only in a couple leagues, and I just picked one up. I'm rebuilding. So I really don't know if my trades are good yet, because I literally had to like unload everything and start from scratch, basically. So I really have no clue if they were good or not yet. And I'm just kind of in waiting mode. But I don't do a lot of trading leagues anymore. A lot of the NFBCs don't trade and stuff. So the last time I had a real trading league, I apologize. I can't even remember when a good trade was. I could just bore you with the dynasty trades from this past offseason that I thought we'd be playing right now, but they're not. So that's kind of a bummer. So I don't really know how good or bad they were at this point in time. But Chris's were much better than mine. I'm looking forward to one day talking again about Weaver and Soto for Adele and Bichette, because I think that's going to be a fun one to look back on. That's for sure.
I hope so.
Well, Chris, that'll wrap us up for tonight's episode. It's been a blast talking to you. Why don't you once again remind everybody where they can find you on Twitter, websites, the works?
Sure. Yeah. Again, you can find me on Twitter at RotoClegg, CLEGG. And you can find my work over at RotoFanatic. Again, we're a new site launching up, a lot of fantasy stuff going on there. And then again, at Prospects Worldwide, doing some minor league scouting over there, did some draft stuff, doing some draft recaps on their podcast, and also writing some team breakdowns of each draft. Just dropped the Red Sox breakdown, who I'm actually covering, working on the Braves, my team, and a couple others that'll be coming out. And so I've got some work coming out on both sites that I'm excited about. And man, I'm just hopeful we'll see some baseball soon and can actually play some fantasy, something that I love. I know many of you listening love. And so I'm just hoping we'll get back to that game we love really soon.
Yep, it's coming real soon. But until then, we'll keep prepping for it the best we can and having conversations like this. So, Chris, thanks for joining me, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you again for having me. It was a blast.
No problem, man. We'll do it again sometime. Everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 296 with Chris Clegg. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.